Yes, Maya.
Hi, Ralph. How are you?
I'm doing well, Maya. How about you?
For a moment there, I couldn't hear you.
Yeah.
As our listeners will guess, Ralph happens to be in the WBAI studios in New York, and I'm here in California. And because he's in the WBAI studio, we have something very special today, a call-in program. We're going to discuss some issues, and then we would like you to call in with your questions and have an interesting discussion, a rare opportunity. The number to call is in New York, 212-209-2900. Again, that's 212-209-2900. And our wonderful engineer, Michael Haskins, will take your call. Ralph is in New York for a very special occasion. This coming Sunday, that's April 1st, at St. Mark's Church at 2nd and 10th Avenue, the New York 9/11 Truth Movement is sponsoring an event where Ralph is the speaker. The title of his talk is Looking Forward After 5.5 Years of Treason at the Top. It'll begin at 2 o'clock this coming Sunday. Ralph will trace the continuity between the attacks of 9/11 and those in London and Madrid. His talk will track the 9/11 agenda in Iraq, U.S. and Israeli death squad implementation of a genocidal design disguised as self-inflicted internecine and sectarian bloodletting. Learn how the orchestrated confessions of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed mirror the fictive proclamations of the equally deceased Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. Hear how these orchestrated menacing acts and proclamations prepare for published plans of the rulers themselves to unleash a new 9/11 on a vaster scale with biochemical agents and toxic gases targeting civilian centers. Ralph will examine the significance of Zbigniew Brzezinski's prediction before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee that the Bush administration will stage an attack within the United States and impute it to Iran as a pretext for war. Join Ralph in discussing the magnitude of our common danger and in examining seriously what is to be done. Again, that's this coming Sunday, April 1st, 2 p.m., all out, to St. Mark's Church, 2nd Avenue and 10th Street in Manhattan. For more information, visit the website of the New York 9/11 Truth Movement, which is www.ny911truth.org. Ralph?
Thanks, Maya. And I want to emphasize, brothers and sisters, that the cover story of the U.S. News and World Report issue for February 19th features an article or a major piece by Stephen Flynn called Terror's Next Target, 5 Years After 9/11, The Next Attack. And just to give you a heads up here, brothers and sisters, Stephen Flynn is the Jean J. Kirkpatrick Senior Fellow of National Security Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations and the lead author of the report America Unprepared, Still in Danger. 20 years as an officer in the Coast Guard, in the White House Military Office for George Bush Sr., and Director of Global Issues on National Security Council staff during the Clinton administration and the World Trade Center bombing of 93. We're dealing here with the principal architect of exactly the kinds of events that unfolded in the bombing in 1993. What's instructive, too, is that he is the author of a book called America the Vulnerable, How Our Government is Failing to Protect Us from Terrorism, in which he outlines how an inevitable attack is going to occur with chemical and biological weapons. And that is the topic of his next book, which is due in a couple of weeks, called The Edge of Disaster. It is an orchestrated theme, brothers and sisters, and I should also mention that this has been now the leitmotif of all of the major publications, MSNBC, NBC News, New York Times, March 16th, New York Times, March 18th, February 23rd, New York Times, Associated Press, March 17th. I could go through each article. Debka, the Israeli Mossad Intelligence Service, chlorine bombs, arsenic gas, cyanide gas. That's what they're anticipating. They're reporting them as plans for the United States. We want to examine what's afoot here.
Ralph, what's particularly interesting about this New York U.S. News and World Report excerpt from Stephen Flynn's book is the locale, which is fans gathered, 40,000 baseball fans gathered at Philadelphia Citizen Bank Park to watch the home team play the New York Mets. And the stadium's 21,000 parking spaces are filled. The stadium is next to Interstate 95, which is headed with travelers during the summer heading for Atlantic City and the Jersey Shore. And what Flynn is stating is that 2 miles, just 2 miles due west from this populated stadium and busy interstate highway, you have the 1,000-acre Sunoco oil refinery on the banks of the Schuylkill River. This is very similar to what exists in Newark with the stadiums and the refineries all throughout the Newark area. And what he contemplates is an explosion at the refinery which unleashes toxic gas. And this is not an explosion that's an industrial accident. This is an explosion that is the consequence of so-called terrorists.
Driving pickup trucks loaded with bombs, leading the way. Crying out, Allah is great. Detonating explosives on suicide vests. The explosion sending balls of flame 200 feet high, killing everyone within 100 yards. Secondary explosions killing employees and contractors, crippling the refinery. And rupturing pipelines containing thousands of gallons of anhydrous hydrogen fluoride, causing a cloud of cyanide gas to pervade the entire area. And those who are in cars, trapped in cars on highways, their engines will draw in the chemical vapors through the car's ventilation systems. This is a blueprint, brothers and sisters. The acid burns the eyes and eyelids of the trapped occupants. Breathing becomes labored and painful as the lungs are inflamed and congested, depriving the drivers and passengers of oxygen, leading to seizures. Many will fall into coma. Everyone caught in the toxic plume will die within 10 hours. This is a nightmare scenario, and it is meticulously laid out, and it is considered to be as almost an inexorable event because there is no way to defend, he says, against the terrorists who have targeted the American population. And he talks about the infrastructure of levees and power plants, a catastrophe that will dwarf Hurricane Katrina. He talks about the American Society of Civil Engineers assigning grades to 15 categories of infrastructure. And the water for purification systems, the wastewater systems, the power grid, the roads, the dams, 3,500 dams around the country, brothers and sisters, there isn't any ambiguity. The ports, 90% of our imports and exports moving by sea will be targeted. This blueprint is something that cannot be regarded as merely an alarmist fiction or attempts to frighten the people. I think it's important to understand that it is echoed, as I mentioned, by the Journal of International Security Affairs and the Institute for the Analysis of Global Security in a subject paper called Energy Security, in which it again talks about the inexorable targeting of oil and gas facilities, striking pipelines, tankers, refineries, and oil fields.
They're talking about attacks in the Middle East, which will have an incredible impact on the United States, since, as they mention, at this point, 96% of U.S. transportation energy is a crucial component in the production and distribution of every commodity from toothpaste to golf balls. And that requires oil supplies. Oil supplies are involved in 96% of all transportation energy. And the United States is at a point where it is importing 50% of its oil, 10 million barrels per day. What this means, according to Zbigniew Brzezinski, is that, as he wrote on March 25th, we are being, quote, terrorized by the war on terror. He says the war on terror has created a culture of fear in the United States, and that the phrase itself is meaningless. It defines neither a geographic context nor presumed enemies. Terrorism is not an enemy, but a technique of warfare. And what he goes on to talk about is the vagueness of the phrase, but that it is calculated. And one of the ways that it is manifested is through the media and articles such as appear in U.S. News and World Report, and in movies and on television, and that the main purpose is to disguise what the administration actually has in store. Ralph?
Yes, Maya. I want to emphasize, and then we should go to people calling in, Maya, but the significance of these proclamations, and indeed the interesting and I think significant piece by Brzezinski, Terrorized by War on Terror, a three-word mantra has undermined America. Brzezinski has broken ranks here. And this is one of the architects of many of these very 9/11-like schemas, as you know, in the grand chessboard and the engineering of the entire Islamic fundamentalist CIA apparatus in Afghanistan. And beyond that, engineering the war against Iran by when Saddam Hussein was financed and armed and sent into amputating the oil-producing province of Iran after the Iranian Revolution. The same Brzezinski is now stating that the war on terror has created a culture of fear. And he says three words in a national mantra. And he says that they are fake. They are propaganda. They are masking the reality. It is an extraordinary expose, if you like, and it's a virtual declaration on the part of Brzezinski that the sector of the ruling class is very, very alarmed that their own plans are being taken to a level that is going to engender a measure of catastrophe in the Middle East that will arise, bring rise to mass mobilizations, and indeed the targeting of the United States from their perspective may have consequences for the capitalist economy that they dare not contemplate themselves.
And Ralph, what Brzezinski refers to in keeping with Flynn's work, he says a recent study reported that in 2003, Congress identified 160 sites as potentially important national targets for would-be terrorists. With lobbyists weighing in, by the end of that year, the list had grown to 1,849. By the end of 2004, to 28,360. By 2005, to 77,769. The national database, Brzezinski notes, of possible targets now has some 300,000 items in it. Among them, the Sears Tower in Chicago and an Illinois apple and pork festival.
Now, what I want to emphasize, Maya, I gave an itemization at the beginning of our show today, our program today, about the numbers of papers in the past couple of weeks that have carried these alarmist predictions and reports. Here's what they state in particular. Iraq gas attacks, and they speak here about toxic gas being deployed now by the resistance in Iraq. And they speak about chlorine gas in particular and how hundreds of Iraqis are being targeted with chlorine gas in each of these attacks. And then they go on to say in the New York Times on the 16th of March, not only in Iraq, but an associate of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the fake terror figure who had already been killed before they not only brought him back to life, but grew him a new leg. As you know, his leg had been blown off in an earlier attack, and the fake one, like the fake Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, are deployed to terrorize the American people. And what is it that they're telling us? A new jihad has been constructed in Lebanon, parallel to the resistance in Iraq. And what are their plans? Why, poison gas attacks, and targeting the United States in particular. This is the kind of psyops propaganda, brothers and sisters, to create a mindset in the United States and to set the table for their plans for a terrorist war of their own, undoubtedly with Iran as the primary target.
Ralph, I'd like to announce, if you're just listening in, brothers and sisters, today is a very special Taking Aim program. It is one of our rare call-in shows. Ralph is in the WBAI studio, and the number to call is 212-209-2900. He's at the WBAI studios because this coming Sunday, April 1st, he will be speaking at St. Mark's Church at 2 p.m. St. Mark's Church is at 2nd Avenue and 10th Street in Manhattan. The subject, looking forward after 5.5 years of treason at the top. For more information, go to www.ny911truth.org. The event is sponsored by the New York 9/11 Truth Movement. Ralph, you're there with the phones, you and Michael, so if you can let us know when we have a caller, and please take it.
Okay, Michael is going to orchestrate this, and as he always does so well. So, brothers and sisters, please, let's have your phone calls. And by the way, I want to mention that when I arrived in New York yesterday and walked into the LaGuardia Airport and was speaking to somebody, a brother was standing by, Henry Hagan, who immediately recognized my voice from Taking Aim, a regular listener of WBAI and a longstanding political activist, former teacher in the city of New York school system, along with Bernard White, who was a colleague at the time, and now a limo driver. Henry Hagan, so glad that I ran into you yesterday, and thanks for being such a supporter of the show and such an active participant in WBAI's work and the supporter of the station as well.
212-209-2900.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello. Mr. Shulman.
Yes, Ralph, please.
Yes, Ralph. It's an honor to speak to you. My name is Peter Kukulis. I've been sending you emails for the last couple of years.
Yes, Peter.
I'm trying to get people together to try to make a film about General Smedley Butler and the takeover of the Roosevelt administration. It was Jules Archer's book, The Attempted Siege of the White House.
Yes, it's an important book.
Excuse me?
That's a very important book.
Yes, also there is a tape of the attempted overthrow in the History Channel, and I'm going to send you a tape, I guess, to your California, to Vallejo.
Yes, Vallejo, please.
And also, I think the American people, they're good people, but they're so ignorant of the history, especially of the Middle East, going back to Mossadegh and Qasem in Iraq. And the whole idea of using religious fanaticism to overthrow all these socialist and nationalist movement that goes back to Vietnam and
yes.
Even Korea. And the American people, thanks to you, you're one of the few people that understand all these very important historical facts. And I just wish there was some way we can get it to the American people so they would wake up and turn over this capitalistic military-industrial complex that
Peter,
we're running roughshod over the rest of the world for profit and exploitation.
Well said. I appreciate that, Peter. I just want to make a point here, if I may. I don't think it's so much a question of the indifference of the American people. The mass of our people are profoundly disaffected. There is class struggle, if you like, when people, after all, living under totalitarian conditions, they piss in the machinery, they don't tighten nuts and bolts. It's a form of class struggle. People are suspicious of what they hear from officialdom. People are alienated. People are profoundly aware of where they're done in and done over every day of their working lives. The issue is rather creating a vehicle, a political instrument, a means through which people can respond, a way for people to move ahead and move forward. So I think we have to be careful not to blame the victims, as it were. It's not our people who are responsible for these crimes or their acquiescence, as it's sometimes described in my judgment. One thing about Smedley Butler, because he was the head of the Marine Corps and he was propositioned by the corporate and banking oligarchy of the day to create a military putsch in the 1930s, and at the time that he was expected to follow through with that, he gave an extraordinary speech before the American Legion in which he said, I was a hitman for capitalism. I carried out rackets in three continents. I could have given the mafia a lesson in gangsterism. It's an extraordinary and dramatic speech that he gave, and it electrified people at the time. And the book by Jules Archer certainly includes that, and any film about what Smedley Butler did would certainly be an education that people should avail of, which the people should avail themselves.
Again, the telephone number to call is 212-209-2900. Let's go to our next caller.
Hello?
Hi, good afternoon.
You're on the air with WBAI.
Thank you. I believe 9/11,
Hello, do you want to identify yourself with even your first name?
Hi, my name is Ken.
Hey, Ken.
Thanks for calling, Ken.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call. I believe one of the significant reasons why 9/11 was staged by our government, among other reasons, was the Taliban, and I have a question behind this statement. The Taliban had eradicated the drug use in Afghanistan, and only the Northern Alliance, in the northern part, was still growing poppy. And the Taliban had, and its representatives went to New York in May of 2001 and spoke in front of the UN and showed graphically, which was not disputed, that they had eradicated the poppy growth. And then after they had gone, and the UN decided not to give them a seat on the council, but yet remained with the Northern Alliance. And then after they went to New York, they went down to Washington and had high-level meetings, which I speculate they were pretty much told in no uncertain terms that we don't like the fact that you're messing with our drugs. And, basically I think they said, well, you know, what are you going to do about it? And we know it happened. My question is it true that, or do you have any information of whether or not what the Taliban did was really to stockpile the poppy to raise the prices, which I don't believe. Or, in fact, did they, like I've been told through some of my sources, actually literally eradicate most of the drug use, drug growth?
I think there's a little bit involved here. Let me just mention this to you. As you know from Albert McCoy's work, The Politics of Heroin and The Politics of Heroin in Southeast Asia, Central Intelligence Agency has been one of the main distributors and architects of the heroin traffic. In fact, Air America, the CIA airline in Vietnam and Indochina, was all about trafficking in heroin from Laos and Cambodia into the United States. As Dick Gregory had documented at the time, they actually would send back the bodies in the body bags of killed soldiers from Vietnam. These soldiers were eviscerated and their bodies stuffed with heroin. They'd be met at Idlewild, now John F. Kennedy Airport, and the bodies opened and the heroin taken out. This was a regular CIA traffic. It gives you a sense of the extent to which our youngsters are used as cannon fodder by a reckless and ruthless and criminal ruling class. As to the Taliban in specifics, bear in mind that the Taliban had been largely put in place in Afghanistan through the offices of the ISI, the Inter-Services Intelligence of Pakistan, which was the de facto government in Pakistan run by CIA. And part of the reason for the fundamentalist turn and the support for these forces was indeed counter the Marxist government that had been overthrown by the fundamentalists armed by CIA and by the Pakistanis, that had distributed land, that had eradicated the drug trade, that had eliminated the restrictions on women's rights in Afghanistan. And indeed, the intention was to destabilize the former Muslim republics in the Soviet Union in Central Asia and through terror operations. That was the whole apparatus that Brzezinski and the ruling class had put in place. Taliban was, in that respect, a creature of American imperialism itself.
Okay.
They were in conflict with the Northern Alliance and some of the Tajik and Uzbek and Kyrgyzstani Pashtun forces that were opposed to Taliban, and the much of what they targeted in those poppy fields were in the areas that their opponents were in control of or occupying. It was a kind of guerrilla-like attack on those fields. So Taliban's opposition to heroin traffic and poppy seeds was less principled and more a function of their dealing with the resistance that they met. But CIA, and I would suggest to you this, certainly the CIA always encourages heroin traffic and cocaine. I mean, they run crack cocaine and cocaine into the United States for a very long time. They were running it out of Central America into the United States. The Clinton, when Clinton was governor of Arkansas, Mena, Arkansas was a primary transit point for the cocaine traffic in the United States. A great deal of documentation over the years by many excellent investigative reporters, Gary Webb, of course, and Alfred McCoy, amongst many others. But so your point is well taken, that the Central Intelligence Agency and American imperialism did not cotton to the fact that the heroin trade would be suppressed in Afghanistan. And since the invasion of Afghanistan, the heroin trade is an all-time high out of Afghanistan, and it's clearly part of the imperial program. But I would suggest that one of the overlying motivations, if you like, for the 9/11 itself was to create the opportunity to seize the natural gas and oil of Central Asia. I mean, they were talking in about $4 to $5 trillion of short-term profit. Unocal, John Maresca's testimony before the Senate and the House committees and all. I go into that in Permanent War, The Stakes for Working People, about the origins of politics of 9/11. That overriding seizure of natural resources and of facilitating a pipeline through Afghanistan to the Indian Ocean was one of the strategic objectives of what they were after here. Heroin is, a secondary advantage and benefit to them. Taliban was their instrument. Taliban became, they use them and they abuse them, like the Al-Qaeda, so-called Al-Qaeda apparatus itself. One last point on this, because, Peter, this is interesting. Seymour Hersh, in a major article in the New Yorker magazine called The Redirection, has documented that the ruling class in the Bush administration have now once again reenacted a secret alliance with the Sunni al-Qaeda across Iraq. Yes, the redirection, the very people that they've been demonizing, the very people held responsible for the resistance in Iraq, the very people for whom 9/11 is supposed to be the crime of the century, are now a secret ally across Iraq. And the Seymour Hersh piece, The Redirection Strategic Shift, we're going to do more programming on this, but it tells you, if you needed to know, just how utterly cynical this ruling class is. Of course, they were always allied with these forces. They use them and deploy them now as their scarecrows. But that's what we're dealing with here. And part of that is what Brzezinski is alluding to when he talks about the war on terror being a fake. Those three words, the war on terror, he said, are hype designed to terrorize the American people. Underlying this is the awareness that the current administration is once again reestablishing that very alliance, and the consequences of that, as they target the new menace, is going to be Shia militancy. That's the rationale. As they target Iran, they're aligning once again with their putative demons. I think it's important that we understand that this ruling class will say anything, will do anything, will arm anybody, will use any rationale to impose their imperium abroad and to impose dictatorial rule at home.
I'd like to remind everyone that Ralph is speaking at St. Mark's Church this coming Sunday, April 1st, 2 p.m. That's at 2nd Avenue at 10th Street in Manhattan. the title of his talk, Looking Forward After 5.5 Years of Treason, at the top. The event is sponsored by the New York 9/11 Truth Movement. Visit their website, www.ny911truth.org. And this is a good moment to take our station identification.
Jazz Vipers at WBAI, New York City.
Moorish, Orthodox, Radio, Crusade, Anarchism for the Global City, Radical Environmentalism for the Concrete Jungle, Esoteric Explorations of the Secret History of Rebel Culture. Every Tuesday at midnight after the news on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI, 99.5 FM.
This is Taking Aim with
Rob Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Today we have a special call-in program. Ralph's in the WBAI studios while I'm here in California. And he's in New York for a presentation this coming Sunday, April 1st, 2 p.m. at St. Mark's Church, sponsored by the New York 9/11 Truth Movement. St. Mark's is at 2nd Avenue at 10th Street in Manhattan. The title of the talk, Looking Forward After 5.5 Years of Treason at the Top. Today we're taking call-ins, as I mentioned, 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. We look forward to hearing from you with your questions. Ralph, take it away over there.
Yes, Maya. Well, let's have some calls, brothers and sisters, and we'll continue this discussion. I want to amplify it's mind-boggling that the demonic Osama bin Laden and his putative cohorts in Iraq, not the Iraqi people, right, but some demonic others who are responsible for resisting irrationally a benign U.S. presence in Iraq. Only about 1 million Iraqis killed and maimed, only about 3 million internal refugees, only the decimation of the entire infrastructure of the society, only death squad orchestration of so-called sectarian violence, only U.S. Actual special forces blowing up the Shia Holy Shrine Mosque at Samarra and imputing it to the Sunnis, as was immediately recognized by the leading Shia Ayatollahs in Iraq, as well as Ayatollah Khamenei of Iran. Only the reality that the Shia and Sunni leaders, tens of thousands of people mobilizing to protest any attacks on any mosques, Shia and Sunni rallying together to resist this. Brothers and sisters, this is a scenario that is targeting us no less than the victim peoples of the region.
Call 212-209-2900. Ralph, are there calls on the line?
Yes, there are, Maya.
Okay, let's take one. Hello, you're on the air.
Is this me?
Yes, it's me.
Oh, very good. First,
your name?
Welcome to New York.
Thank you. Thank you, brother.
I hope that your presence here, since I've been involved for a few years, that your presence here will help unify the effort. Do put your effort into that. Perhaps you could meet with some of the key people. And I want to ask you a couple of questions.
Sure, please.
First, I was able to get discounted books, and I'm wondering, since I've heard I'm not too satisfied with something the author said in terms of a put-down of the 9/11 Truth Movement, but he covers a lot of territory. Are you familiar with Peter Lance?
I'm not.
Triple Cross.
No, tell me what you have in mind.
Big book, 550 pages, and International Terrorism and the FBI.
I don't know this book.
Well, the one thing that he does have to offer, as it says across the front of the cover, is how Bin Laden's master spy penetrated the CIA, the Green Berets, and the FBI, and why Patrick Fitzgerald failed to stop him. So that's good. But unfortunately, he seems to be affronted by having to serve on the same television program with, as he describes it, a professor who wrote several books on relating to it as a...
You're saying that he says that a Bin Laden spy penetrated the intelligence agency?
Yeah.
I think he's got it upside down.
Yes.
Well,
yes, I would say that. I think Maya's on target here, brother.
I think this is a book of disinformation.
What we have to be conscious about here is that the Bin Laden family, father and the brothers, were all the principal financiers of Bush Sr. and Mortimer Snurd, George W. Bush himself, through his company Harkin Energy and Arbusto, which means Bush in Spanish. This is a long-standing alliance of the, not just the Saudi royals, but the Bin Ladens in particular. We were talking earlier about heroin traffic, and the Bank of Commerce and Credit International, BCCI, which is essentially a laundering operation for drug trafficking and for death squad operations through offshore funds over a very long period of time.
Well,
that's the ruling class, and they control and they dictate and they pick up their puppets along the way. I think it's important to understand who's using who.
Yeah, well, Lance had been a special agent with the FBI in the 90s, and he's written these thick books, which evidently is getting into members of Congress, which I think you ought to have equal sway there.
Well, I certainly want to look at the book, and I appreciate very much your calling it to our attention. I think but I would just caution you about one thing here that we have to be very clear about. Those who make these decisions have power over the state in our society, vast power. And these forces that they put into play here have the hands of intelligence all over them, as we're well aware with respect to the so-called Al-Qaeda apparatus. It's a CIA creation from the get-go. And we have to constantly bear in mind that all of those people who are ascribed, we're told they're hijackers and this and that from Mohammed Atta, what have you, these people are run by intelligence. They were trained at U.S. military installations like, Maxwell Air Force Base.
Let me just ask you to remember a couple of weeks ago you covered the person who had volunteered that he committed all these crimes.
Are you talking of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed? Yes, that's a very good example of what we have in mind here, because point one, and I'll be dealing with this in my talk on Sunday, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was killed in Pakistan. Detailed accounts by the Pakistani intelligence services and the police, the Pakistani press, at the time that he was killed. And then that occurred at a very important political moment for Bush on the first anniversary of 9/11, when they were in trouble over various calamities for the administration. Every time they're in trouble, with the Gonzales revelations and the Walter Reed revelations, they now produce the so-called confession of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. They did the same thing when they actually killed him on the first anniversary of 9/11. And the American press, and particularly the British press, The Guardian and Independent, we did a detailed show on this, specified all of the eyewitness and other data about the death of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. In 2003, they staged a raid. And they staged a raid on an apartment in Pakistan, where, in fact, there was no figure any way, shape, or form associated with, let alone Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. It was the apartment of a retarded man who was the son of a microbiologist, and all of the eyewitness testimony and the press reports make clear there was no Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in that apartment at the time. That's when they say they captured him. They captured the corpse. They captured an absent corpse. So this is what they call the intelligence agencies create legends. They create entire fake scenarios to hypnotize the population with their either their prowess or the wickedness of the enemy or the demon with which they want to frighten us into acquiescing in long prepared plans of invasion, long prepared plans of funding the Pentagon, long prepared plans of taking away our civil liberties. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is precisely a phantom of this kind. Now, they have him taking responsibility in his confession for everything but the murder of Julius Caesar and the assassination of Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is Maya actually did a bit of inventive research here and found that one of the targets, you see, they also impute to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in this confession that they had prepared further targets in the United States. And one of these was the Plaza Bank in Seattle, Washington. Problem. The Plaza Bank in Seattle, Washington wasn't even created until 2006. See, the CIA slipped up here. And this is what we're dealing with, brothers and sisters. We have to be very clear about how media are at the service of this system of death.
One last thing. You mentioned the names of two prominent senators who stood up and congratulated the FBI.
Congratulated the FBI in regard to this confession?
Yeah.
Yes. Do you remember them, Maya? Was it Carl Levin? And,
right.
I believe Carl Levin was one. I don't recall, frankly, off the top of my head, what senator...
So I think we ought to call them. People ought to contact them and say, why don't you check this out?
What they were applauding was the tribunal apparatus and saying how this is a proof that it is working.
But I have to point out, brother, that almost all the bourgeois press found this particular theater a little bit hard to stomach.
Yeah.
Because you have here some person who is held incommunicado. Nobody can hear him. Nobody can witness the evidence. Nobody even knows if he's existent. Nobody can verify anything at all. And he's taking responsibility for, and this is very important for us to understand, he takes responsibility for such events as what? The Berlin Discotheque. Well, the Berlin Discotheque was an operation of the Israeli Mossad, which the German press and German officialdom have had to acknowledge. He takes responsibility for the coal. They've already had Condoleezza Rice telling us who had done that. He takes responsibility for the airline, for the attacks on the embassy in Nairobi and Dar es Salaam. We know who was the key point person for that. It's Ali Mohammed, who was a CIA operator trained at Fort Bragg. The San Francisco Chronicle had that all over the place. In particular, he is taking responsibility for the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center, which he says he was organizing with others. No mention of Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman. We've had Patrick Fitzgerald convicting Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman. Are they going to release him from prison? Are they going to exonerate Lynn Stewart? Here they're imputing to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed all the events that they had confidently in the official so-called commission report on 9/11 to demonic others.
Okay.
They recycle this stuff. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is a fiction. This is a method of brainwashing of the population of the United States, but it is so transparent, it is so grotesque, and the methodology reveals what we often call the architecture of the fascist state.
And this is a good point to go to our next caller, 212-209-2900.
Hello?
Hello,
yes.
Can we have your name?
Yeah, my name is Keith.
Thank you
and Ralph for giving such great information week after week, month after month. I've been a listener since 2001 to your program, and
we're very grateful for that, brother.
I learned so much from you. But listen, have you ever heard of HARP? HA is an acronym.
Yes.
It's about some beam, they're heating up the ionosphere in Alaska.
That's very much what the Pentagon does with a lot of these satellite shots. They're engaged in space weaponry, which is designed to affect the weather patterns and the climate in the United States. And HAARP is one of the, if you will go back to the programming we did about the tsunami, it is HAARP-like manipulation, indeed a detonation from a base in Australia, which we, I think, provided very substantial documentation for. Which by the way, the Indian Navy and Indian Naval Intelligence reached the same conclusion about the nature of the genesis of that particular tsunami and the areas that were affected by it.
Ralph, actually, the research on HAARP, much research has been done by Professor Rosalie Bertel, who also has done much of the incredible research
on depleted uranium.
Uranium, and while we prepared a very large file on HAARP, always intending to do a Taking Aim program, we still have not done a Taking Aim program on HAARP.
But I'm glad you bring it up, brother, because...
Well, thanks for bringing it
up. Yeah, it's very important.
Can I ask you one more question?
Oh, please.
Yeah. In U.S. is decided to wage terror on its own population. This mercenary agency, Blackwater, do you think that they will ever be deployed on U.S. citizens?
You saw them at work in New Orleans. You know what? You know what they had Blackwater doing? They had 70,000 of these mercenaries, these cold-blooded killers who they had set to work in Iraq, at work in. And what did the Army Times call New Orleans? They called it Little Somalia. They called it Little Somalia. They set up martial law and they set to work these mercenary killers like Blackwater, of whom Kofor Black, who is a head of counterterrorism, is now a principal executive.
And
that's right.
The Nation magazine recently featured an article about private armies such as Blackwater, particularly at work in Iraq.
These are union, by the way, I just want to say this quickly on Blackwater, brother. It's not only that Blackwater has been deployed as a kind of thug army. These are union busters. Blackwater hires itself out to employers, both in Iraq and in the United States, to bust unions and to break strikes. This is part of the terror apparatus of the ruling class against working people. And we see it unfolding in particular in the war on Black America, exemplified by the utter catastrophe of the devastation of the Mississippi Gulf and of New Orleans.
212-209-295, excuse me, that's for the WBAI premiums. This is 212-209-2900. That's 2900. We thank, this is Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen, and we have our special call-in program for Taking Aim today. Next caller, please.
Hi, my name is Bob from Manhattan.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for being on today. I'm involved with the Quaker community that is always seeking for peace and justice.
Yes.
And clarity. And recently I had come across some of Henry Wallace's writings from the 40s, and I wondered if you had any perspective on him. One of the things that I read that he had spoken about was fascism within the government returning and warning about that. And I guess if you had any perspective on Henry Wallace, Studs Terkel and Amy Goodman's show said that Henry Wallace was one of his all-time heroes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to point out, of course, as people are aware, Henry Wallace was the Vice President of the United States at the time of Franklin Roosevelt's last term. And, yes, Henry Wallace was at various times an opponent of right-wing forces within the United States. We have to understand him politically. He basically represents the liberal wing of the ruling class in the United States. It's essential to point that out. And frankly speaking, the politics of the Communist Party in the years of the 30s and the 40s, very much taking their direction from Stalin in that era, was to deflect and direct protest, radical activity, and particularly the movement of the working class, which, after all, at the time of the Great Depression, gave rise to the formation of the CIO, was a mass movement. instead of building an independent political expression for working people, for the particularly the super exploited sector, the persecuted black working class population in the United States, all political protest was channeled into the New Deal. And the consequence of that, and I have to say emphatically here that it's not only FDR, but Henry Wallace, an architect of this, the consequence of this is to demobilize the population. The no-strike pledge flows from that. And that is the essential element of the sustaining of capitalist rule and imperialism. So, yes, Henry Wallace was opposing far-right policies at the time, but the framework of FDR and the New Deal and of liberal capitalism is to stabilize the capitalist system and to demobilize any disaffection from it. And the problem for working people is that unless we have a political instrument of our own, unless we can challenge that 1% that own 90% of the national wealth, if we can't do that, we cannot touch this system, because most of the crimes of which we speak are the crimes of both parties and the apparatus of enforcement, the intelligence services and the military and the Pentagon. They are in continuity regardless of the nominal party in office without power. So I think it's important to have that perspective in understanding the dynamics of the politics of the New Deal and Henry Wallace and FDR in particular.
The reason I mention this in relation to what you're talking about is Henry Wallace he had to run an independent campaign. He considered having Paul Robeson as his vice presidential candidate in 48 because the status quo, including FDR, wouldn't support his candidacy for the presidency. So he ran an independent party and really broke away from the more traditional Democratic or Republican parties at that time.
Well, you have to, again, bear in mind that the perspective, I appreciate your points about the role of Henry Wallace, but I think we have to understand that Henry Wallace's desire was to pressure the Democratic Party to return to the politics of the New Deal, a reformist party. The CP at the time was entirely in support of this project, and it's been an impediment. Look at the problem we face.
Ralph, it particularly was, because Henry Wallace was felt that the notion of Cold War was...
He was opposed to the notion of Cold War, but he supported the Korean War.
Mm-hmm.
And Henry Wallace was, notwithstanding what we're describing here, a fundamental supporter of the politics of U.S. imperialism on a global scale. It was the methods through which they were to be implemented that were at issue for fear of alienating that very working population that would be then motivated or propelled into forming their own political challenge. Keep in mind.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you, brother.
Ralph, we have time for one more telephone call. 212-209-2900. You're on the air.
I'm on the air?
Yes, you
brother.
Are. Hello.
Okay. Sorry. I want to talk about September 11th. I think a lot of what's happening in our country can't move forward and we can't heal until we truly investigate what happened on September 11th. If you just look at the movie Loose Change, three New York college kids made this movie, or Scholars for 9/11 Truth. We were told that 19 terrorists captured four planes and that's what happened on September 11th. There's so much evidence that that's not what happened. And the 9/11 Commission, I heard you mention that on the program. That 9/11 Commission and the report, so many omissions and so much information not there. We need to start looking at the thousands of websites that are out there and people who are investigating this. It needs to get into the mainstream media and into our government investigations.
Well, I appreciate that. I share what you say, but I would like to make one observation, if I may. First, of course, there is a massive amount of data pertaining to the inside job, the government's responsibility, the architects, really, of 9/11. you quite rightly point to the organizations engaged in trying to build a movement around this. I have one caveat, one reservation, which I'd like you to consider. Many of the brothers and sisters involved in this important work have the expectation, some might think it an illusion, that if enough pressure is brought to bear on Congress, a so-called independent investigation can be expected. Unfortunately, our experience with this, and I speak now about the efforts we made with regard to the Kennedy execution and the execution of Martin Luther King Jr. and of Malcolm X and the, you know, the Kennedy brothers and so on. Every time Congress got involved or the Rockefeller Commission or what have you, and there's one of these so-called investigations, let me tell you what happens. I was at a conference at NYU Law Center in 1975, and Fletcher Prouty, who you may remember was a high-level Eisenhower CIA official who was actually the liaison between assassination, the intelligence organizations of assassination, and the Eisenhower White House. He was sent off to the South Pole in New Zealand in the weeks prior to the Kennedy execution. And Fletcher noted that the all-points bulletin about Lee Harvey Oswald got to the New Zealand press before the event occurred. He hadn't signed on for the execution of the head of state. And he wrote a book called The Secret Team, and he, in fact, broke with them. But I was talking to him about the Church investigation, Senator Church investigating assassinations, right, in the United States, Church, former CIA. Fletcher went there as a witness. What happened? The people who were running that investigation for Church were the former deputies of Fletcher Prouty in the operations of assassination. They were doing a, you know, soft wing and a buck and shoe to get out of his line of sight. When Dick Gregory and Robert Groden and I went before the Rockefeller Commission, and that's a complex story about the breaking of the autopsy report on Robert Kennedy that showed he'd been shot at point-blank range from behind, what did they want? They wanted to know, where'd you find out this? Who told you that? Where can we get our hands on this? What do you think they were doing? They're going to shut it down. They want to find out where the information comes from. At that time, there was a photo of three so-called tramps at Dealey Plaza.
We're running out of time.
Well, I'll just tell you that the tramp photo, which had as one of the tramps, the very person whose photo was distributed by the FBI in an all-points bulletin wanted for the killing of Martin Luther King. This guy was Raoul. This is one of the people who was running the patsy, James Earl Ray. When we showed them that photo, they said, who took it? It turned out to be a reporter for the Dallas Morning News. Greg and I were on a plane going to Tennessee, and I pick up a newspaper, and I find Dallas reporter found dead. We were sick. Bear in mind what these official investigations are about, brother and sister. They're about shutting it down. They're about smoking it out and coming out with the same conclusion that they originally started with. So we have to do this investigation. This is a people's investigation. It's part of the furniture of our being capable of building a political movement to remove these people from power. You can't look to the perpetrators and their apologists to investigate their own crimes. And that, I think, is a movement lesson that must be as absorbed today as we had to learn it the hard way before.
And on that note, we conclude this edition of Taking Aim on March 27th,
and I hope to see you Sunday,
2007.
April 1st.
All out, April 1st. For Ralph speaking at St. Mark's Church, 2 p.m. That's at 2nd Avenue and 10th Street in Manhattan. Looking forward after 5.5 years of treason at the top, a lecture and a long discussion period.
And thanks for joining us today. We're going to have more call-ins in the future. Appreciate all your calls.